Hey, this is Mike Zwick from If Not For God podcast. Our show, Stories of Hopelessness Turned Into Hope. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just seconds. Enjoy it. Share it. But most of all, thank you for listening and for choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network. Welcome to Finishing Well, brought to you by CardinalGuide.com with certified financial planner Hans Scheil, best-selling author and financial planner helping families finish well for over 40 years. On Finishing Well, we'll examine both biblical and practical knowledge to assist families in finishing well, including discussions on managing Social Security, Medicare, IRAs, long-term care, life insurance, investments, and taxes. Now, let's get started with Finishing Well.
Welcome to Finishing Well. Today's show is kind of interesting. Do I need a trust? Now, not do I need trust, but do I need a trust, which is a legal instrument? And, you know, we were thinking that it kind of lines up with this proverb, you know, just the simple answer is wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he who gathereth by labor shall increase. In other words, if you really are understanding what the value of trusts are and what need to happen, and you're not using this as a tool to puff yourself up somehow, then, you know, and it's a tool properly used, it actually is quite helpful in certain circumstances, but well, you got to know the circumstances.
So here's my rule with trusts is I need to see a clear purpose behind the trust that it's serving, because trusts, they're expensive to set up, they're expensive to maintain, and they create possible hassles even to you while you're alive of getting at or using your assets. Doesn't mean they're bad because of all those things. They're wonderful. They're great when there's a clear purpose behind them, when there's something specific that the trust is going to let us do that we couldn't do without the trust.
Yeah, and I can't help but think of my own story, because I know less about trust than probably any human being out there. But I found out all too quickly when my father passed away that, not unlike what we talked about often on the show, of going back and looking at things that have been outdated, you know, because people set up things years and years and years ago based on the way they think things are going to happen, and they never update them, like the beneficiaries on your life insurance policy or on your IRA or those kind of things we always talk about, getting those up to date. Well, when it comes to trusts, yeah, that's really helpful to keep up to date on those kind of things. My father had set up one that really had to do with his business, and his business didn't end up going the direction that he thought it was going to go, so the trust wasn't actually necessary anymore. However, he never changed the beneficiary on his life insurance policy. So when he passed away, which he never dreamed coming the way it would come, because his wife preceded him in death, who was like 17 years younger than him. And so the trust was set up that if she passed away, then it went to all the kids, which created this huge, like, since there were five kids involved, there were five trustees on the trust. And his life insurance was listed on this thing, and the trust had never been opened because no money had ever gone into it. But now the beneficiary of life insurance policies is. So I say all this not to complicate anybody's mind for a minute, but to say, wow, what looked like a great idea 30 years ago when an attorney was looking at his overall estate, you know, as things change, those things change. And that's part of the planning of using a trust, and part of, you know, why you, like you say, they're something to maintain.
Sure. So I'm guessing that a number of our listeners have been exposed to the classic revocable living trust that you just got to have and you can't live without. That's either being promoted at a seminar, or the, you know, you've gotten mail, and a lot of times the mail you get promoting these things, it's like six pages long of material explaining this type of thing. Or somebody you know or somebody you're related to has gone to one of these seminars, and I have a bit of a problem with that, the trust mills, in the sense that the general idea is this one type of trust in whatever state you're talking about is going to work for everybody. And just everybody in attendance at the seminar has got all this list of problems and purposes for a trust, and that the trust is going to, that they're recommending is going to clear up all those things. And so, I mean, we literally have clients that come into us that say, I want a trust. Okay. And then, you know, I get a sense many times that they don't thoroughly know what a trust is. I mean, they just know that they want one. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And so I'm always going to dig into, like, why do you want a trust? And what do you want this trust to do? And what's going to be the purpose? And, you know, is this going to be an irrevocable trust, or is this going to be a revocable trust? And, you know, what is it we're trying to accomplish? And many times people can't answer too many of those questions, or they can, you know, it just boils down to, well, I don't know, I just know that I need one. There are also people that will confuse a trust and a will. Those are, you know, in a last will and testament, and those are two different things, entirely different things. And so some people that tell us that they want a trust or they need a trust, they're really talking about they need a will or they need a last will and testament. And of course, we don't do those. We're financial planners, but we provide the service of referral, and we have an attorney that works in conjunction with us, at least to our clients in North Carolina, where she's able to, if somebody truly wants a trust and they can give us a clear purpose for it and some direction, she can actually put one in place for them. Now, when we talk about the revocable living trusts that are, you know, pretty much sold by the trust mills, what they're going to teach you at the seminar is, you know, is like probate, or the process of, you know, that happens after you die, of the court distributing your assets according to your will is almost like an evil process or something. I mean, you want to avoid this at all costs. And, you know, it's slow, or it can be slow, and it's expensive. So why wouldn't I want to avoid something that's slow and expensive when I could have this trust that is going to avoid that entirely? Okay. And the way a trust avoids it entirely is you put all your assets in the trust. And that's part of a problem, is that you now don't directly own anything you have. It's owned by the trust, which you control because it's a revocable trust. And by the way, my sense is that most people that are asking for a trust coming in, they're not necessarily looking for this kind of trust that I'm describing here. But that's where the idea of a trust originated, because they don't really totally understand all these things. And, I mean, having a trust in place where all your assets were in there and then you die, and then having the trust distribute the assets, that can be smoother than probate. And it can cost you less than probate, but I would say that you've spent more on that trust, having it over the years and then maintaining it, than any amount you're avoiding after death by avoiding the probate process.
Which was clearly, I mean, unbelievably the case in my father's. Like, oh my goodness, you know, what he spent on that trust was unfortunately a huge waste of his assets, because, you know, it just made actually the probate process a little bit more difficult rather than easy, which itself wasn't all that expensive for us.
So if your main purpose is to avoid probate, if that's what you leave the seminar with and you want that, to me, that's not enough reason to just set up a trust. But that's my opinion. You may differ. And if you differ and you still want it, we'll be glad to, through the attorney, set one up for you. Probably less expensively than the people selling the boilerplate deal. There's some more reasons that they're talking about in there. So I just want to kind of go through this stuff, because I'm guessing that a number of people have already been exposed to this. So I'm going to give a little contrary to opinion to what they're hearing in there. The second one is a trust is going to keep things out of the public view. So when you go through probate, and, you know, that's not a huge concern for a lot of people. I mean, there's not that many people interested in what I had after I die, I'm thinking. And even if they were, I could care less. I mean, but I'm not everybody. And I also don't have $100 million or some huge amount of money and have a bunch of public notoriety. So there's reasons that people would want to keep their estate settlement out of the public view. Okay. And so that's a valid reason for having a trust. But if you had that much money and that much thing, you definitely don't want to be buying one of these boilerplate trusts. Okay. Now there's the thing of creditor protection. And this is where I think that they, I'm going to question the effectiveness of this. By putting all your assets in a trust, you no longer own them. Okay. I mean, you can control the trust, so you can, it's as good as owning them because you can do things with them just like you always did. But they're technically not owned by you. They're owned by the trust. And then you're the trustee. So if you're going to use this, like, you know, many doctors are concerned about people suing them for malpractice, lawyers, people in my business. And, you know, a trust can be one way to protect it from creditors, but it's pretty easy for a court or an action to force right through the trust, especially if you're the trustee, or in other words, for them to just deem that as a way you're hiding your assets and you still got to pay your debts. So enough about that. I mean, I've just gone over some of the negative connotations of a revocable living trust. They still have a place and they have a purpose. Now, I'm going to just talk about some of the reasons that you would want to trust, okay? And I think that we're coming up on break. I do want to let everybody know that Cardinal Advisors, the firm that I run and founded, we're available in all 50 states in the United States. We're licensed, and we're home right now with the pandemic. We're staying very busy, but certainly not too busy to talk to you. And I've written a couple of books. The Complete Cardinal Guide to Planning for and Living in Retirement, and the workbook edition of that, which is a separate edition. And if anybody is really interested in reading my book, if you just send me, you go onto our website, cardinalguide.com, and you send me an email or a message on there, give us your address, we'll send you the book, or your email address, we'll email it to you. You can also buy them on Amazon, or you can get them right from our website. So, wanted to let you know that.
Yeah, and of course, today's show is brought to you by cardinalguide.com, where you can find out all about that. Don't forget the guide after Cardinal. And the Seven Worries tab is there as well, which today's show, essentially, you didn't put this on trust in the Seven Worries tabs, but where would you place it as far as probably in
Under estate planning and life insurance. Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Okay.
When we come back, we will finish as why you would need this trust as we go, why do you need a trust today on Finishing Well?
Hans and I would love to take our show on the road to your church, Sunday school, Christian, or civic group. Here's a chance for you to advance the kingdom through financial resources by leveraging Hans' expertise in qualified charitable contributions, veterans' aid and attendance, IRAs, Social Security, Medicare, and long-term care. Just go to cardinalguide.com and contact Hans to schedule a live recording of Finishing Well at your church, Sunday school, Christian, or civic group. Contact Hans at cardinalguide.com. That's cardinalguide.com.
Welcome back to Finishing Well. Today's show, we're talking about why would I need a trust? And so we talked about some of the reasons that would perhaps not hold a lot of sand. But there is some places where the balance of law would be that this would be a really good time to have a trust.
Well, yeah. I mean, a trust as opposed to probate. I mean, what probate is going to do is through a will and a last will and testament is it's going to distribute your assets to who you intended. I mean, your assets are going to be distributed to your children or your spouse or relatives or the church or however you name things, and then you're going to have an executor. But the whole emphasis here is on distribution. And it could be that you don't want your assets distributed after your death, that you want something different to be done. And you want to be able to lay out what that is. Like I gave you the example, as I had considered it one time when I owned a beach home, to put it in a trust, a revocable living trust, so that it would be revocable so I could later revoke it and sell it, which I ended up selling it anyhow. But I had this vision of my family using it and having it beyond my life, which my wife's in my life. And so it would be pretty simple to set up a trust, deed the beach house into the trust, and then put some source of money in there to pay the upkeep, and then lay out the rules for my kids and grandkids to use the thing. People that own a farm, or they own a business, or they own something precious that they collect, or some family heirlooms, they may want to say not only who those go to, but what they do with them before they're given clear title to them. Just, you know, there's just an infinite, as long as it's lawful what you're doing, you can write that into a trust, and then the trustees are responsible for carrying out your wishes.
I know
just
of
distributing
a really cool
the money.
One like that. The there was a lady who was, her name was Rachel, and she had this car. In fact, you'll find it on Christian Car Guy that she hit. It was a 1963 Plymouth Valiant that she called, God, now I forgot the name she called the car, but she, it had over like 480,000 miles on it. And the car was famous. I mean, it was... She did this whole bit with driving all over this car, and because she had bought it new and kept it all these years, and the car was just fabulous. Well, she wanted that car to end up in a museum. You know, that was what, and so she actually had a trustee of this trust for her. The car's name was Chariot. It came to me.
Okay.
And it was really cool from my standpoint as a car guy. What here was a something, like you said, it was very precious to her. She wanted Chariot to find the kind of home, you know, to where everybody could enjoy Chariot for, you know, and she set this
That's
up.
Perfect.
And the deal was that the trustee took the car to a museum in Minneapolis, and there it sits under this trust, you know, and for all time.
Well, yeah, you can have an irresponsible beneficiary, or at least nobody has to get them deemed irresponsible if you think they're irresponsible. And this is, you know, your money that you're putting into this trust, but yet you care about them and you want to make sure they don't squander the money. But then you can set it up there with rules, appoint a trustee, and then give the trustee some discretion, and it was going to prevent an irresponsible beneficiary from receiving a large amount of money and squandering it. I know that
or
we have...
Or being for their own harm, you know, obviously.
Sure. So there's all kinds of... for pretty wealthy individuals, you could have a family farm, which is worth a lot of money. You know, maybe it was worth a little bit 40 years ago, but, you know, 20 years from now, it's going to be worth $20 million, okay? And, you know, it's subject to estate taxes, and then it's just subject to breakup. I mean, if you're going to leave this to three or four beneficiaries, and we've got a, some of them want to cash out, some of them want to run the farm, you want the farm to continue. I mean, I could think of just an infinite number of reasons that we would want to set up a trust. You may have something that you own, or a lot of somethings, that when you die, you want to be able, you want the people that are handling your estate to be able to tell the IRS you didn't own it. Okay. I mean, it just, so you see that beach house up there. No, we don't own that. That wasn't his, you know? And so, if you're going to try to pull something like that through trust ownership, you're going to have to be very, very smart, but that those things can be done. In other words, trusts can be used, irrevocable trusts can be used to hold things that you don't want counted in your estate, but yet you want beneficiaries of them to have the use of them throughout your lifetime. And so I don't really want to get into a lot of complicated trust law and trust talk. I want to keep this show simple, but I want to talk about some of the reasons, just generally, why you would need a trust, and then, you know, I think the reasons why you wouldn't want to trust is, number one, they're expensive to create. You just got to pay the lawyers a good bit of money. They're expensive to maintain, where you've got to keep ongoing expenses. You really need to fund them unless they're a testamentary trust. You got to put money in there. And once you put money in there, then you got to manage it, and that creates more expense. And then furthermore is if you wanted to break them up and you wanted to break through a trust, that can be done, but you could put something in there now, and then 10 years from now, you could say, I wish I hadn't have done that. I really want to get that out of the trust. The trust could create some hassles for you to even get at your own money. So there's plenty of reasons to not do it. And I've got a client right now that is pretty adamant that he wants a trust, okay? And he's working with the attorney, and his rationale for wanting a trust is really just because his financial advisor told him that he ought to have one, okay? And that he ought to get stuff out of his names because it's just going to create bad things for him after his death. And I really think that we're going to work through that, but, you know, we're in the business of giving clients what they want, and we're going to give them all the advice that we, you know, disagree with. And this isn't an absolute, because I want to give some credibility to all his reasons. But in the end, we're just going to give him what he wants. But I'm really, with this particular guy, I'm really working at talking him out of it, and so is the attorney. I mean, she's going to earn fees setting up the trust, but she's still not recommending it because there's just better ways to avoid probate. And the other client that I wanted to mention is a client that's been with me a couple of years. He actually learned about us up in Indiana through the show. And he, we're managing his money. He's got some insurance with us. We've worked out his health insurance because he's not yet 65. But he came to me in the middle of the process, and he had been to a seminar, just like we had talked about. And he was somewhere between really wanting this trust and adamant that he's going to have it. But he wanted to know what I think about it. And it was just, I didn't open up with him like I opened up the show. But I needed to get it across to him that his points have merit. And, you know, he could do this. But one of the fatal flaws in the whole presentation, because he sent it to me, he went to a group presentation, but then he sat down with the guy and showed him all his assets. And this guy had him moving all his IRA money, which this guy, most of his money is in an IRA, over $1 million, into the trust. And you just can't do that. I mean, IRAs, as long as you're alive, so I can talk to any one listener out there, you I'm talking to, if you have an IRA or you have a 401k that you're going to roll into an IRA, that has to be in your name under your Social Security for the rest of your life. It can't be in your wife's name. It can't be in a trust name. And it exists that way because if there's $1 pulled out of there, let alone $100,000 or whatever amount of money is pulled out of there, you're going to owe taxes on it. Or at the very least, if it's a Roth, you're going to be accountable for the fact that you don't owe taxes. So you can't put IRA money in a trust. And that's where the flaw in this whole trust mill thing was. And so this was a real logical guy. He was an engineer, or he is an engineer. And he's become a friend of mine, and that's really the point. There were many points that this was just not right for him to open up a trust, but this one was so glaring, I just pointed that out to him. And then I found him an attorney that was right there in Indiana for him to do all the stuff that he did need, and it just worked out great. I mean, they worked over the phone, they're happy clients right now, no trust. Yeah, you got to apply for a tax ID number. And then if it's an irrevocable trust, you got to file a tax return every year. A lot of folks don't know that. And the trust has got to pay taxes on any earnings, even if it was $20. I mean, you got to file a tax return, and, you know, there's going to be a 1099 come out in that thing. If it's a revocable trust, that's one of the benefits, is that you can revoke the thing during your life. You also can pull any earnings out, or you have to, and they show up on your personal tax return. And by the way, that's how they find the money when the creditors are looking for it and they want to bust up the trust. So trusts are not generally too effective in warding off creditors of the IRS. So a lot of people want them. A lot of people have been told they want them. There's a lot of people on the brother-in-law theory that your brother-in-law has been to the seminar. He's all eat up with this stuff, and now he's convincing everybody he knows to do this, and then you come in to see me and ask for one of these things, and it's fine to just be asking questions. But it'd be nice if the brother-in-law just got disclosed that you don't have necessarily a firsthand source of the information. I'd like it better if you went to the seminar and you actually had the books and that kind of thing, because there's just a lot of misinformation in this whole trust concept that develops throughout that.
And again, we get back to what we talked about last week, that, you know, we want you to have fun with this stuff. Like, man, I'm excited about this, using this trust, because understand what its real purpose is and how it's going to benefit the kingdom and all those kind of things. They have their purposes. And we want you to have joy in using them. So thank you for listening today. Again, the show is brought to you by cardinalguide.com. Don't forget the guide after Cardinal. And there you can just email Hans if you want his book, The Complete Cardinal Guide to Planning for and Living in Retirement. If you like to just want to binge listen to Finishing Well, you can get us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all those, your favorite podcast outlet. Or just tell Siri, I want to hear the Finishing Well podcast. And there you can just listen to episode after episode. Thank you for listening today.
Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed Finishing Well, brought to you by CardinalGuide.com. Visit CardinalGuide.com for free downloads of this show or previous shows on topics such as Social Security, Medicare, IRAs, long-term care, life insurance, investments, and taxes, as well as Hans' best-selling book, The Complete Cardinal Guide to Planning for and Living in Retirement, and The Workbook. Once again, for dozens of free resources, past shows, or to get Hans' book, go to CardinalGuide.com. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for future shows, click on the Finishing Well radio show on the website and send us a word. Once again, that's CardinalGuide.com. CardinalGuide.com.